From WBUR Boston, I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Football's preseason kicked off Sunday. Regular season's just weeks away. It's already been a crazy few months for the NFL. Saints head coach Sean Payton returned after paying the price for Bountygate. Tim Tebow has joined the Patriots, whose tight end was charged with murder. More talk about head injuries and injuries of all kinds. This hour On Point, huddle up. Football's back. You can join us on air or online, where the conversation never ends. Are you ready for some football? What draws you in, turns you away? What do you always wish you knew about football? We've got some people who can help out. Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. We've got two of the best minds in the game as our guides this hour. With me in the studio, Andrea Kramer, chief health and safety correspondent for the NFL Network and a correspondent for HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. For five seasons, Andrea was feature and sideline reporter for NBC's Sunday Night Football. Andrea Kramer, thanks so much for coming into the studio.
It's a pleasure to see you, John.
And with us from Oakland, California, Amy Trask, once described as the most powerful woman in football. She spent 25 years with the Oakland Raiders organization before stepping down as CEO in May. Amy Trask, welcome to the show.
Hello, John, and hello, Andrea.
I want to start, Andrea.
By the way, can you handle a female double team? How great is that, having two women talking about football? I mean, that in itself is something, right, John?
I'm a little intimidated. I may already be concussed a little bit, but we'll see how I can hold up for the entire hour.
And one disclaimer, Amy, he is a Washington Redskins fan, but he said that's okay. He can admit that, and but we should know it, and the audience should know it, and that's good.
It's the beauty of living in this country. We all get to root for whom we want to root.
Yes, and Amy, I still hold the 1984 Super Bowl against you. I just want you to know I was present at the game, and it was the worst experience of my life to be blown out so badly by the Oakland Raiders.
You know, John, every time I see Joe Theismann, I don't behave particularly graciously. I have a word or two about the game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm sure that when he runs into Jack Squirek, he has a bad time,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Let me start, Andrea, with you and just get you to summarize, since we're on the verge of the full-bore preseason, to tell me what are the main storylines you're looking for this NFL season, and give me your top three or four contenders for the Super Bowl.
Well, you mentioned one, which is a year ago at this time, we were talking about Bountygate, which was the New Orleans Saints under siege for allegedly having a program where they paid for performance. One of the casualties of that was their head coach, Sean Payton, who had led the team to the Super Bowl. He was suspended for 1 year by the commissioner of the National Football League, Roger Goodell. Sean Payton is now back. The question is, how much does coaching matter? I think we're going to see it matters quite a bit. So we'll see how he does in returning the Saints to prominence. That's one thing I'm going to be looking at. Peyton Manning, this is a year into a system in Denver. I think he did so much better than anyone would have thought after sitting out a year.
And he's got a new weapon.
He's got a new weapon in Wes Welker, a wide receiver who left the New England Patriots after six seasons. Tom Brady not happy about that. Tom Brady's loss, clearly Peyton Manning's gain. Can Peyton Manning, what does he have left at the age of 37? He thinks plenty, but their window is slowly narrowing. And then, of course, we just mentioned Tom Brady, the New England Patriots. We can never lose sight of the news value of the Aaron Hernandez case, the tragedy that exists for the families involved. But from a football standpoint, you are losing him as a major weapon.
And potentially plugging in Tim Tebow, of all people, to replace him, at least in some circumstances.
Perhaps. The injection of Tebow to the team. You also don't have your other great offensive weapon, Rob Gronkowski, who will likely start the season on what's called the physically unable to perform list, sick, which would mean he's not eligible to return to play for the first 6 weeks of the season if indeed the Patriots do go that direction. He had back surgery in the offseason. So, you know, those are just a couple of the things that I'm looking for. And then, of
help
course,
our viewers out who are trying to prepare their expectations. Who's going to win the Super Bowl?
You know, I knew you were going to ask me that because that's what we talk about. And I'm going to give you who I think, but here's my disclaimer, and it's a really valid one. Every single day in training camp, there are new injuries that come up that can virtually change the complexion of a team. And I'm talking about a season-ending injury. I got a list of them right here that that impact a team very, very strongly. We saw it even with Tom Brady a couple of years ago. He gets knocked out on the first game in the first game of the season.
You're ducking. So, who's the winner?
Are you going to try to help me, Amy,
I was actually going to try to deflect while you thought about your answer.
Well, I'm going to go with the San Francisco 49ers.
Okay, Amy, Andrew did not pick either the Redskins or the Raiders. Can you believe that?
Yes, I can. I do want to note, Andrew, you mentioned Peyton Manning, and then you transgressed, you sort of went into injuries. That injury to their center is significant in Denver, and I do think it's something to keep an eye on when we watch Peyton Manning. That's his center.
Dan Copen, the former New England Patriot, who, again, another one who moved over to Denver, he's lost for the season. Again, you have all these injuries have domino effects on these teams, and it could be, they only lost one player, but believe me, those things are significant and can definitely affect a team's chances. Hey, I just mentioned the Niners, but they're without their top wide receiver, who was injured, tore his Achilles, Michael Crabtree, and their starting cornerback Chris Culliver, he's out for the season. So again, you have to plug guys in, and oftentimes they're simply not as good as who the previous starter was.
So, Amy, what are your storylines?
From a business standpoint, I think we go into the season with teams facing the same tension they've been facing over the last few years. How do you attract your fans into the stadium when the at-home viewing experience is better and better and better? Focus a little bit on the Los Angeles market. Will the league be back into Los Angeles soon? And the league now is eyeing London. I think those are some of the things to look at right now.
And who's your Super Bowl team?
Oh, I'm going to enjoy this. Go ahead. You got to answer. I answered. You got to answer.
Boy, I'll say I don't think that anybody can answer that question right now sitting here in August.
That is one of the all-time ducks that I've ever
heard. Yeah, that's...
It was good, wasn't it?
And by the way, John, you're going to give us your pick too, right?
Well, the Redskins are going to win.
I like a man who picks from the heart. I like a man who picks from the heart.
And by the way, that is another great storyline, the return to play of Robert Griffin III from a torn ACL and a media collateral injury.
Who is the most electric player in the National
and
Football
will League. He be the same player, because will he be able to run the offense the way he wants to coming back from this injury?
Now, let me talk to another existential issue about the league, and I want to get into that with two sound clips that we're going to play back-to-back, and we'll talk on the other side.
Hit, the ball comes out. Davis and Jenkins comes up with it. And they're ruling it incomplete. Fred Davis got robbed. Janoris Jenkins took the ball to the end zone.
Well, I love big hits. I think we all do. But when guys are defenseless, you can't lay the hammer down on them like Janoris Jenkins just did right there.
All right, now we're going to hear from the ex-wife of Junior Seau, who committed suicide, and spoke to the toll that the game had taken.
I think there's so many symptoms that we've all witnessed. The mood swings and the depression, the insomnia was terrible. Honestly, I have a whole other level of compassion for what he went through at the end, because he hid it so well.
Amy, talk about the effect this is having on the game. Short-term and long-term, from a business perspective, is football going to be able to remain the way it's been indefinitely?
That's a heck of a question, John. I don't think anything's going to remain this way indefinitely. I think the league will continue to look to improve the safety equipment, to modernize it, to improve it as best as possible, to adjust the rules and the manner in which the game is played, and to teach safer tackling techniques at a very, very young age. But no, I don't think the game will remain as it is indefinitely. And I think the first place that we may start to see some significant changes is at the high school level. Are we going to continue to have a robust high school football program throughout this country, or will high schools be the first place we see that football is dropped?
Andrea, I have to say, I think some of us in the media also bear some responsibility. There's some, I forget which network it is, that promotes football with helmets that collide and explode, which indicates the the certain amount of bloodlust with this. Lem Barney, the Hall of Fame a cornerback for the Detroit Lions, said football may not exist in 20 years.
Well,
what do you think?
The crashing of the helmets, that was the very iconic opening for Monday Night Football. You no longer see that. But that's always been one of the things, John, is that, you know, NFL films, the propaganda arm, if you will, of the National Football League, they've always made money on videos that glorify the violence of the game. That's been pulled back quite a bit because of the realities of the type of thing we heard from Gina Seau. But let me go back also to one other thing. When we talked about important storylines going into the season, ironically, one of the real important events is going to happen 2 days before the regular season kicks off, and that is September 3rd, when a federal judge who is acting as a mediator is expected to rule on whether or not to dismiss this lawsuit that has been brought by more than 4,000 former players and their wives as to whether or not the league concealed for years the effect of head injuries. Finally, that was placed to a mediator, and she is supposed to rule on September 3rd if she can bring this to a close or whether or not both sides have reason to continue forward.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook.
Go! Tackling it one-on-one! Tackling one-on-one pass pro! Once you guys get one here, go over to tackling.
Sounds of the San Francisco 49ers training camp. That is Andrea's pick for the Super Bowl. No doubt the team is hoping for a redemption of last year's loss in the Super Bowl to the Baltimore Ravens. We're in the huddle this hour talking about the upcoming football season. We're talking with Andrea Kramer of the NFL Network and HBO's Real Sports with Brian Gumbel, and with Amy Trask, who spent 25 years with the Oakland Raiders organization before stepping down as CEO in May. Amy, let me start with you by asking about the lawsuit that Andrea mentioned and what the NFL can do and is doing to try to mitigate the risk of serious injury to players and mitigate some of their legal exposure.
Well, John, Andrea referenced the roughly 4,000 plaintiffs, and one thing that I think is very interesting in this lawsuit is that those plaintiffs played the game, either they played the game or the men whose estates are plaintiffs played the game over a 40, 50-year period. The knowledge that someone had about the risk of head injury 50 years ago or 40 years ago is entirely different than the knowledge that we have today. So I think one of the complicating factors in the litigation is breaking these groups of plaintiffs down into those who had more knowledge and perhaps assumed a risk they were well aware of versus those who didn't. There's also the impact of the collective bargaining agreement. Some of the plaintiffs are covered by a collective bargaining agreement, which requires that claims of this nature not go to federal court, but rather be resolved pursuant to the CBA, whereas some of these plaintiffs are not covered by the CBA. So at this point, all of those very technical litigation issues are being argued and resolved by the parties, and you know, a lot of money is being spent on legal fees right now. I'm often struck and wonder if in this instance, if all the money that's being poured into legal fees might not better be poured into a pot from which this can all ultimately be resolved.
Let's take a call from our listener, Jim from Bloomington, Illinois. Jim, you're on Point. Go ahead.
Hi, John. I just wanted to make a quick comment as a Chicago Bears fan that one of the things that we've been reading down here is how the 1985 Bears, the Super Bowl champions, when they gather, they have to remind each other who they are, and Jim McMahon, the quarterback's wife, has to leave him notes so he knows who she is. It seems to me that players back in the 60s didn't have these issues. And I don't know whether it's the number of games or the equipment, but clearly something is happening to our heroes, and I'll take any comments offline.
Thanks, Jim. Andrea, how do you fix it? Is it rule changes? Is it technology, better helmets, more pads? What do you think?
Well, it's probably D, a combination of all of the above. I also want to, I so agree with what Amy said, and it's interesting also, she mentioned this big pot of money. I thought she was actually going to say, take that big pot of money and put it towards the players to actually help them as opposed to just the lawyers. One other thing to amend is that this is not, just to make sure everybody understands, this is not a class action suit because you do have all these plaintiffs with varying degrees of problems. I mean, from the most extreme, you know, players who are suffering from ALS, who are completely non-functioning, to players who have some memory loss and things of that nature. Not to diminish those, but you have such a wide variety of issues there. The caller from Illinois just mentioned Jim McMahon. Yeah, Jim McMahon has some serious issues. The one thing that's interesting is if you ask any of these players, though, if they would have not played the game, if they knew what they knew now, they all still say they'd play the game. What can you do? I mean, this is the NFL has been on high alert to do what it can in terms of starting with the rule changes, in terms of the discipline, fines, suspensions for illegal hits. There's one rule change in particular that has garnered a lot of attention, and it's for lack of a better word. And Amy was there actually at the NFL owners meetings in March when this was passed, so she can certainly speak to the debate that ensued over this. For lack of a better word, it's called the crown of the helmet. Now, if you touch the top of your head, that is considered the crown of the helmet, not your forehead, which is what people are freaked out and thinks, oh, he's going to duck his head. Anytime a guy gets hit in the open field like that, it's going to be a penalty. No, it's not the forehead. It's the actual top of the head. And you know what? Players should not be lowering their head like that. And the penalty is actually potentially on both parties, both on a running back who could get hit at the top of his head in the open field, as well as the defensive player who would be hitting him. So, and a lot of players are up in arms about this. How are the running backs going to protect themselves? This isn't going to affect the running backs as strongly as people really think. In the beginning of the season, there's always issues with consistent calling of new penalties, but it will even out very quickly. But Amy, this really turned out to be quite a brouhaha in the NFL in the offseason.
Amy, let me ask you about that rule change that Andrea just mentioned. As somebody who was on the inside, who is now out of the game at least for a while, how satisfied are you at how well the National Football League is taking care of its former players and acting to protect its current ones?
Let me answer that in two regards, and then I'd also like to respond to the question that the Chicago Bears fan called in with about why are we seeing more of these injuries now, perhaps, than players many years ago experienced. I think the NFL as a whole is doing some things very well to assist former players. I come from an organization, I grew up in an organization where you didn't ever want to cap or put a limit on what you did for your former players. That was of paramount importance to us. So I there come at this from a viewpoint that there is a tremendous, tremendous responsibility on the teams, the league as a whole, care for former players. That matters, and that's what needs to be done. As to the issue the caller raised, it's a great question, and it's one that many of us have discussed for quite a bit of time now. One theory is that as equipment has gotten bigger and stronger and tougher, players are more willing to use their heads to hit. When you speak to men who played the game when helmets were smaller and perhaps not as sturdy, and when there were no face masks, they weren't putting their heads into piles. They weren't diving in head first, helmet first, into make a tackle or a pile because they had no face mask. And the helmets weren't as big and as strong as they are right now. It may be that the evolution of the helmet has turned it into something that makes people feel absolutely insulated from injury.
So what do you do about that?
Well, some thought is being given to whether or not you need to now go back to having less of a face mask or doing something with the helmet so that people, it's not just an issue of legislating that you don't want to use your helmet, but perhaps making people less likely to use their helmets.
Hey, John, you know, Amy brings up a really interesting point, and that one that you don't hear about very often, and that is there's so much talk about what the league should do for its former players, so much talk about what the Players Association, the union, should do for its players. But really, she brings up an issue. What about the team responsibilities? Now, she worked for an owner, the late Al Davis, who was renowned for taking care of his players, really. And this is so overused, but in Mr. Davis's case, true, like a family member. He was almost obsessed with it, trying to take care of the former Raiders. Amy, I am really wondering, why don't more teams do it? Is it just the sheer economics, or is it something that just has to be laid off onto the league itself?
That's a great question, Andrea, and I don't know that there's any one answer for each team. Some of the owners, Ralph Wilson in Buffalo, Clark Hunt in Kansas City, in Clark's case, his father, Lamar Hunt, Ralph Wilson, Al Davis, Lamar Hunt, many of these men are football men that go back to the early, early days of football. You know, perhaps there's a different view from that perspective. There certainly are very varied views between and among many, many owners, and I think each owner approaches it differently.
Let's go to another listener. We've got Jeff on the line from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Hi, John. Thanks. A proud cheesehead calling in here. And my comment is that it seems to be that there are more injuries now as they keep weakening training camps, limiting the number of reps guys get. And correct me if I'm wrong, I don't think you can even have a full contact practice in training camp anymore. So how are guys supposed to be practicing proper technique in tackling? And it seems like now they start trying not to get hurt, which is, of course, a surefire way of getting hurt.
Amy, is that a legitimate point? Is are restrictions on training contributing to the problem?
Well, this sure does seem to be the year of the ACL, and as I recall, last year it was the year of the Achilles. This is something the NFL is going to take a very, very hard look at. Statistics are reviewed all the time, but certainly anecdotally there does seem to be a connection, a correlation. I don't know yet whether there's causation involved, but there certainly seems to be a correlation between the dramatic reduction in off-season programs and the increase of injuries in training camp. When the new collective bargaining agreement was entered into a couple of years ago, off-season conditioning programs were dramatically scaled back. And certainly it appears, this year in particular, that season-ending injuries, many of which Andrea noted at the beginning of the show, are increasing. Is that a correlation? Certainly. Is there causation? That's something the National Football League is looking into.
Andrea, let me ask you how much the NFL is seeing and is concerned about downstream effects on peewee football, high school football, parents not letting their kids play. Is that going to ultimately choke off the popularity of the sport?
Well, not just the popularity, but the population of kids who could be developed into future NFL players. The percentages are small, but they have to start somewhere. There's no doubt that the NFL is positioning itself as a true industry leader in terms of player health and safety that will trickle down through the NCAA as well as to youth football levels. Let me just put this in perspective for you. The National Football League has a union, protects its players. The NCAA is a whole nother story in terms of the protection of its players. But youth football has no overseeing body. There are thousands of independent youth football organizations. Everybody thinks of Pop Warner. It's the brand name. It's Kleenex. A very small 10 to 15% of the number of youth football players are actual Pop Warner leagues. So it's so hard, John, to get uniformity in terms of health and safety. USA Football, which was started by both the National Football League and the Players Association, they put money into it, has a program called Heads Up Football, which sort of is as what you'd think. It teaches, amongst other things, safe tackling techniques. But it's really all about education. And I've seen this. I did a story last year on a Massachusetts team 10 to 11-year-olds in which five children suffered concussions in one game. That should just not happen. So you've got to get the safety measures down at these lower levels. Heads Up Football, USA Football is having these programs, accreditation, education for not just the coaches and administrators, not just the kids who really don't know any different, but for the parents as well.
Will the National Football League exist 20 years from now?
I'm going to say yes, because it's big business.
I absolutely agree.
It's too big of a business. You're talking about a $9 billion business. You're not just talking about a random sports league.
So it will be reformed and preserved.
I think it's going to have to be reformed. One thing that I'm always interested in, and maybe Amy's got a better sense of this than I do, how much do people care? I mean, I know they care as human beings, but you know what? On Sunday, people want to live vicariously and watch their teams and watch their players play. That's really what they want. How much are they always really interested in these off-the-field, real-life, as I call them, sociological issues?
Well, what I wonder is whether the confluence of the conflict, the guilt people feel, combined with concern of their own kids, that those two things come together and impact the sport. But I want to, Amy, get you to respond to...
Can I just say one thing that's really funny? Listen to this. Pop Warner, okay? What do you think is the number one complaint / concern that Pop Warner officials get from families?
Tell me.
Why doesn't my child play more?
Right.
No, seriously.
Let me go to the issue that's been the most sensational of the NFL's offseason. It has to do with the murder charges against Aaron Hernandez, who is a tight end for the New England Patriots. Here's the coach, Bill Belichick, talking about that case.
We spent a considerable amount of time evaluating our current players and educating them on not only football, but many other life experiences and off-field subjects. We stress high character, and we stress making good decisions. And we'll continue to do this, and we'll work to do a better job of it as we go forward.
Amy Trask, a lot of law enforcement issues in recent years with NFL players. Are teams doing enough to scrutinize and evaluate the character of their players?
I really do believe teams are trying. I mean, at the end of the day, John, no team wants to get that phone call in the middle of the night that a player has been arrested. So I do think that teams are trying. Are some teams perhaps trying harder than others? Sure. There's 32 teams. I can't tell you that each of the 32 is as vigilant or as diligent as the next. But I do. Look, there's no value to a team to see its logo all over every media outlet with the word murder allegation across the screen. So, yes, I do think teams are trying. Might there be other methods to deploy? Sure. But I know that teams are looking to find those ways to discern between and among potential players.
Andrea, quickly.
Well, you know, the Patriots did the right thing in terms of where they drafted Aaron Hernandez. He had issues in college at the University of Florida. They drafted him in the fourth round, which was appropriate. He dropped to the right place. Did they sufficiently vet him before they re-signed him to a multi-million-dollar contract 2 years ago? Robert Kraft, who's one of the great owners in the NFL, said the team was duped. They shouldn't have been duped.
This is On Point. I'm John Harwood, in for Tom Ashbrook. We're getting ready for some football with two of the sharpest minds in the game. We're talking with Amy Trask, former CEO of the Oakland Raiders, and with Andrea Kramer, chief health and safety correspondent for the NFL Network and correspondent for HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. Amy, I want to play you a little clip from the movie Silver Linings Playbook, in which the Jennifer Lawrence character shows some chops about her football knowledge. Let's listen.
When you started spending time with her, it all fell apart. This is the reason right here.
The first night that Pat and I met at my sister's, the Eagles beat the 49ers handily 40-26. The second time we got together, we went for a run, and the Phillies beat the Dodgers 7-5 in the NLCS. The next time we went for a run, the Eagles beat the Falcons 27-14.
I got to say, I'm impressed. I didn't trust it before, but I got to say, now I do.
Amy, a lot of the women who have risen to high positions in football have been the daughters or the widows of football people. You are not that person. You became CEO of the Oakland Raiders. Tell me how you were drawn to football, how you got into it and rose to that job.
I have loved football as long as I can remember. I fell in love with the game when I was in junior high. And I did not come from a family of football fanatics. They all went out and did things on Sundays, and I stayed home and I watched football. I think one of the things that appealed to me about the game is it's got a very, very cerebral component to it. It is really chess at a very high speed, high impact. It's stronger, faster, speedier game of chess. There's a real intellectual component to the game. I became a fan. I followed football, and at one point in graduate school, I picked up the phone and called the team that I had fallen in love with while I was a student at Cal Berkeley, and the team was in Oakland. And the team now was in Los Angeles, where I was attending graduate school, and I said, I'd like to be an intern. And that started my career. I performed an internship for a year. I went and finished up school, and a year or so after I was out of school, got a call from the team asking me to join full-time, which I did, and I left the team 26 and a half years later.
Andrea, how about you? Are you a reporter who happened to fall into football as something you were covering, or did you go into this business with the idea of covering football?
Well, first of all, when I too, like Amy, I got the bug when I was about 8 years old, and it was all over. But at that time, John, which is kind of, this is sort of a scary thing to say, I didn't exist. There wasn't an Andrea Kramer or an Amy Trask that I could say, I want to be like her, because we didn't exist. So it didn't occur to me that I could ever do what I was passionate about as a chosen profession. But I'm very lucky that obviously I was able to do that. I will tell you one funny story. Amy and I met in 1989 at an NFL owners meetings in Chicago. We met John in the ladies' room. We were the only women there. We kind of looked at each other a bit warily.
Well, that's good. No line then.
There you go. No line. Believe me.
We said to one another. Exactly.
We looked at each other warily, and it's sort of like, you know, well, we should probably get to know each other since it's the only estrogen in the room, so to speak. But, you know, clearly, you know, more women have gotten involved in football and all aspects of it. I've always said, you men do not, with all due respect, have the gene, G-E-N-E, which makes you knowledgeable about football. Women can know about it as well. And I've always believed there are basically, in my profession, two types of women. Women who grew up loving the game, loving it so much, and oh, by the way, I report on it, I write on it, I commentate about it. And women who want to be on television or on radio, or they want to write, and oh, football sort of seems, or sports seems kind of like a cool thing. Both Amy and I would definitely fall into the previous category. We love the game, and we were lucky enough to be able to turn it into a profession.
And you know, Andrea, I would add to that, there were often times over my career or throughout my career where people assumed that I was a businesswoman who happened to fall into football, when my view was I was a football woman who, because I couldn't play defensive end, had to find another role in which to serve a team.
And believe me, we will sit there and have talk about football just the way you and your buddies might. And I'd like to think we're kind of knowledgeable.
Well, there's no doubt about that. Let's go to one of our listeners. Mike is on the line from Nashville, Tennessee. Mike, welcome to On Point.
Hi, John.
Go right ahead.
My question, let me precipitate my question with the comment. There's a problem that's befalling all sports right now. And that is the dwindling attendance as a result of rising cost and as a result of the evolution of HDTV, which continues. And myself, I can sit here in my home in Nashville and watch a Titans game and see more, know more, be better informed, and not have to pay the high prices, not have to deal with all the junk you have to deal with by attending a game. And it's the same across all sports. So I wanted to ask both ladies what they see the NFL doing in the future to try to make the experience of attending an event a better experience in lieu of the rising costs.
Amy, what about that question? And one thing I wonder is, do teams even care if they make their money off of corporate boxes? Do they care whether ordinary people show up or not?
In reverse order, I'll say absolutely positively teams care. You face a local blackout or a blackout of your game in your local market if you don't sell that game out. And for purposes of calculating whether or not you're sold out, the seats in the suites and the club seats don't count. So it's only those other seats that you need to fill up to televise your game live locally. You also want that home field advantage that occurs when you pack your stadium with fans who are, you know, we hope so full voice that the opposing team's offense can't hear the snap count, and, you know, your fans can generate 5-yard chunks of penalties for you for false starts. That said, to answer the former part of the question, the caller raises a pivotal issue right now, and I believe is wise to note that it's all sports, not just football. But the fact is you can stay home, and you can have multiple screens in your house, HDTV all over the place. You can have 3 laptops open. You don't have any problem with connectivity. Your Wi-Fi works. Your cellular works. And when you go to the refrigerator, perhaps to get a soda or a beer, you're paying for 6 of them what you may pay for 1 of them in stadium. And, oh, you're in your house, so you don't have to pay to park, nor do you have to drive through traffic. These are very, very real concerns that the National Football League and all sports are facing right now.
Andrea, how much is that issue a question of what people can afford, and how much is it because people have bet money on games and they want to stay home and watch a bunch of games and see how their bets are going?
Well, look, this is, as Amy points out, this is a huge issue for the National Football League, and it's about enhancing the stadium experience. And you bring up a really, really good point, fantasy football, all right? It's what, Amy? It's like a $1 billion industry across all sports, but huge for football. So if I want to know how my team is doing, how my players are doing, I need to have some way to even follow that if I'm sitting at the stadium.
Is fantasy football the avenue for betting on football?
Well, I mean, sports betting is clearly, talk about another huge industry, absolutely, but the fans want to know how their guys are doing. So this is part of what teams have to do to enhance the stadium experience. They have to be able to have a lot of games that are available, and, you know, because you can get that at home on the Red Zone channel where you will see, you know, excerpts of every game. So you have to be able to have that. Stadiums have to be Wi-Fi capable. The other thing is that one of the things that they're doing, which again goes to enhancing the stadium experience, is you're trying to give access to the fans something that they could not get if they weren't sitting in the stadium. So for the first time, the National Football League is putting cameras in the locker room, showing shots from pregame. Now, believe me, players are not fired up about this. And it's not that dramatic. A bunch of guys sitting around with headsets on listening to music. But again, it's about what can you give the people in the stadium that for one time they can't get if they were sitting at home. And certainly you have to factor in what the whole fantasy football interest is all about.
Andrea, we've got to let Amy go. She's got a plane to catch. Amy Trask, thanks so much for being with us today.
It was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you both for having me, and I'll look forward to listening to the rest of the show.
Excellent.
Thanks, Amy.
Andrea, let me talk to you about a couple of other issues, cats and dogs that have come up and that I've noticed in some of the coverage. First of all, I saw that there's a new rule on taunting, trying to resist the sack dances and the pistol displays and the sort of things that people do after they catch a first down. They make a salute or do various things. Is that proof that this, in fact, is the No Fun League?
Well, this has been something that's been debated for a while because, John, it's such an emotional game. And, you know, there, a lot of times you just have coaches that say to players, you know, act like you've been here before. Act like you've been in the end zone before. I mean, yeah, you just sacked the player on third down and they're going to now punt. But, you know, this is not exactly turn the course of the game necessarily. So Is it about being a professional or is it about taking the fun out? I think that there's plenty of fun still to be had.
Well, speaking of fun, we've got a video that came out in the last couple of days involving Eli Manning, Peyton Manning, and their father, Archie Manning. And I think nobody would say that this is not fun. Let's take a listen.
It's football on your phone. That's what I said.
It's football on your phone. You can watch it in bed.
Take it. Wherever you go,
show your friends and watch them all go home.
It's football on your phone.
Uh-huh.
hum this now for the rest of the day, aren't you?
I will not get it out of my head.
It's amazing.
And I can't get the picture of Archie with that hair out of my
head.
Right,
and for your listeners who may not have seen it, and I don't want to plug it, but you got to see it. It's Eli and Peyton dressed up as rappers, which is just hilarious in itself. And this is one of the things that I love. And look, I don't think you can find a more serious player in the National Football League than Peyton Manning. But he has always been the first at poking fun at himself and in just an absolutely hilarious way. And the one thing that I like to see, it's always been Peyton's better. Peyton's better than Eli. Last I checked, Eli has two rings. So two Super Bowl rings, so they're on par with each other, believe me.
You're reading my mind. I'm wondering whether, in fact, judgments about the merits of those quarterbacks are slowly, or maybe not slowly, changing.
Well, everybody's different in this respect. I have always been...
Personally,
about,
I like Archie
rings.
The best, but...
You know, well, yeah, I mean, but hopefully you weren't wearing a bag over your head with the Aints when he was struggling in New Orleans. I've always been about the rings. And how many rings does someone have? And again, it's a team game, so you cannot put it just on one person. But there's no doubt to me that Peyton and Eli are on par with one another. Eli will never have the stats that Peyton had. He will never run an offense the way Peyton did. But to me, they truly are the first family of football, and they are both great players, and as we saw in the video, just great, great characters who are not afraid to poke fun at themselves.
Speaking of rings, my Washington Redskins have won 3 Super Bowls, but there's a very large controversy that simply won't go away about their name. I read this morning that Slate Magazine joined a small group of publications that said we're not going to use Redskins anymore because it's offensive. What do you see happening with that issue?
Well, I don't mean to turn, you know, to volley this back over the net this quickly, but I'm curious. You're the longtime fan. You are, I'm sure, not bereft of opinions. What do you think about it as a lifelong Redskins fan?
I'm a tradition guy. It's going to be hard to knock me off that position, but I'm open to hearing the argument. What do you think?
Well, you know, look, again, you always want to be respectful of people for whom this, you know, it's like we were talking about with Hernandez. You got to be careful to separate the life aspect of it and the football aspect of it. For those who may feel insulted by the name, you know, definitely I have empathy for them. It's a brand name. It is an iconic brand name in the National Football League. And do I think that it was ever meant to be insulting to people? No. Can it be insulting to people? Absolutely.
Will it still exist 10 years from now?
In my opinion, if Dan Snyder is still owning the Washington Redskins, they will remain the Washington Redskins.
As a woman covering the sport, talk about ways in which you try to communicate to women share your enthusiasm with the sport.
Well, you know, it's interesting because I'll speak to groups of professional women, and I will say to them, the water cooler does exist. It is literal and figurative. And on Monday morning, in businesses all around the country, there are guys who are really hanging around it, talking about how their team did. And this isn't about being one of the guys, but this is about staying in the conversation. And what I say to women is, look, and there's women out there, and they want to know about the cover two, and they want to know the difference between the 4-3, and they want to know every detail. And then there's women, John, who couldn't tell you the difference between a down comforter and a first down. And what I say is, you know what? Just open up the sports pages. You know what the headlines are in the news. You know about Bradley Manning. You know about what's going on in Egypt. Know if your team won. Know who did well. Stay in the conversation because you belong there, and you should be there. And you don't
for
have
the same
to,
reason. Yeah. Do you tell them to Google search Justin Bieber if they have kids, so they stay in that
well,
water cooler conversation?
I've got kids, and yeah, you have to. You do have to be. You have to speak their language. But it's not. It to me, women can know about football and be interested in it. And what women are interested in are the stories and the personalities. And they want to know what lies behind the masked men, so to speak, the helmeted figures. That's what they're interested in. And women are interested in a lot more of the issues that exist. But
is football gaining or declining in popularity among women right now?
Oh, 40% and growing. No, there's no doubt. And women who are serious about understanding the game. I host a number of events around the country, NFL 101 programs teaching women about football. I did one in Philadelphia a year ago. We had to spread it out over 2 days because close to 1,000 women wanted to come in.
Do you find an increasing number of women like you who, for reasons of love for the game, want to go into the news business to cover it?
Sure. I mean, the numbers, as I said before, I didn't exist when I was growing up. A lot of women now can look at, young women can look at myself, at Pam Oliver,
Leslie
at
Susie Visser.
Colbert, exactly, and say, you know what? I can be like her. And you know what I tell them? Learn all that you can. Learn about the game. And if you love it, if you really love it, it shows.
Andrea Kramer, thanks so much for sharing your time with us today. It was really fantastic. She's the chief health and safety correspondent for the NFL Network and correspondent for HBO's Real Sports with Bryant Gumbel. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter. Find us on Facebook at On Point Radio. Coming up tomorrow, one Earth year and 70,000 pictures later, what have we learned about the Mars rover Curiosity? I'm John Harwood in for Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.